Hi, I'm Sam Morril. Please watch my new special, Up on the Roof, on YouTube. It's on a bunch of roofs. You'll know it's my special because it's a roof. So check that out, and it's a good time, guaranteed fun. Hey, Eugene, how are you, man?
Hey Sam, how you doing, man?
Thanks for having me on your show.
Thanks for joining us on the show, man. We are more than honored to have you here.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
Sam was just saying that he doesn't have shoulders. I didn't have vitamin D
Oh.
after this whole thing.
No, it sucks when you look at you're like, I probably look all right. And then you look at you're like, oh, fuck, I don't have shoulders. It sucks. But, some shirts were, this company keeps sending me shirts. And I'm like, I think you need these. I think I saw like what a jack guy looks like in these shirts. I'm like, that's how it's supposed to look. So that's a bummer. But,
How did you celebrate Thanksgiving though without the family? Was it the first time without the whole
Yeah.
family and turkey situation?
Sure. Yeah, we didn't. I mean, like, if my parents aren't there, there's no turkey. I'm not that invested. I love it, but I'm not gonna cook a turkey. I had my girlfriend in town. She wasn't with her family, which was a big deal. And we just went to a Mexican restaurant and then we ordered in Chinese food for dinner. So it was a very un-American Thanksgiving.
Maybe one could say that was the most American that you guys were.
Right?
This
I mean,
Thanksgiving, right?
that's the joy of New York is it's such a melting pot. You can get good any food. So,
You know what I've,
generous toast.
whenever I talk to comics that have their girlfriends over, I always wonder what is the impact of having a girlfriend over to your comedy? Do you feel like there's some, do you feel like the stuff that you can't think of when your girlfriend is around? Because I used to feel like that all the time.
Yeah, it's
When
hard.
it is, right?
When she leaves, it's like the floodgates open, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's how a joke works. Well, you try to be, that's you being a person. You try to be present with the person you're with, so you shut that part of your brain. The people that don't shut their brain, I mean, can you imagine what it would be like to be with to be dating like Rodney Dangerfield? I mean, we love him because he couldn't shut it off, but he's like, well, you're telling me that? I get no respect. She's probably like, Rodney, give it like an hour, you know? So you try to shut that part of your brain off to be present, but yeah, I do worry. I feel like I'm always losing ground comedically, especially
Right?
with a pandemic.
I used to feel like that. I used to say to my friends all the time, and they used to be like, because I used to have a long-term relationship. I stayed with my partner. So 7 years ago, we stayed together for 5 years. Man, those were the most unfunniest 5 years of my life.
Well, were you happy? Was that the problem?
Well,
I think sometimes when you care about someone, you don't write as honestly about them. Right? I mean, that's difficult. I'm also, my girlfriend's a comic, so I think she's got the same
Ooh.
problem. She's got the same problem with me, I think. I think it works both ways. And it's just hard to write about the person you're with. And then that, especially in a pandemic, like life has stopped moving forward. Our jokes are based on experience and based on
Yes.
living. What am I going to write jokes about The Crown season two? Like, no one's like, so I was watching this show the other day. People are like, right, that's what we're all doing, I guess, now. I feel like every premise just depresses people and reminds us of our immobility, you know?
Yes, especially when she gets on that yacht and then she moves around. They're like, she was lucky. You're like, that was a long time ago. Whenever I always found that, geez, you've said a very, very, very true thing. It's very hard to write honestly when you're with someone.
Yeah.
And also because people forget that, because I like talking about relationships. I don't know, it's one of my favorite topics to talk about because it comes so easily to me. But I feel like
Yeah.
whenever I'm in a steady relationship, I feel like I have to justify the experiences that I speak about on stage, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you just, when you care about the person, you want to be
Mm.
very careful. And I've made that mistake before where I've hurt that person. So, in probably countless relationships. So you just want to be. You want to be careful. Yeah, I mean, I feel like women are just, and I don't want to generalize, but I think they just tend to be more thoughtful than we are. A comic's job is to be in their head, and I feel like
Yes.
women are just more in their head than men are.
Yes.
I feel like a lot of times she asks me what I'm thinking, and it's just there's nothing going on. And I could be like, what are you thinking? And she could go on for like 30 pages. You know what I mean? So
Yes.
I'm in my head when I'm writing. I'm in my head when I'm walking alone. But when I'm with another person, sometimes I just shut down.
Yes. And you know, the question that I always struggle with and I get asked all the time in a relationship is, where are you? I could be sitting right there and the person goes, yeah. Where are you?
She always says to me, where did you go?
Yeah.
Where did you go? Yeah, I get, where did you go? And I was like, I sometimes drop off. I'm like a shitty old iPhone. I don't always work. You know, like I work sometimes. I'm like a 4. You know, like it's the battery ain't great. You gotta plug it in. But yeah, it is important to be present. It's something I'm working on. My therapist will tell me you need to be present. Enjoy the time you have with her. Like when you're in a long distance relationship during a pandemic, that creates so much extra stress. I mean, there's already stress to be in a relationship. Yeah. There's already stress to be in a long distance relationship, but the external stress that we're all dealing with this year, that's outside of our control. I mean, with travel, with dates, with road work as comics, is this gig going to happen? Should I cancel it? Is this a bad idea? Is this irresponsible? The thoughts that we have going through our head constantly, like, I value peace, and I don't think we're getting a lot of it this year, you know?
Yeah. It's become so valuable. You're right.
Yeah.
You know what I watch, I think I've watched a lot of war movies, and I've always wondered what brings young men together to go to war, right?
Yeah.
And I go, it's patriotism. We can always scratch that one out.
Yeah.
Some are doing it for financial reasons, but the camaraderie that comes with being together as men or whoever, as men or women, but just as men in a war fighting.
Gotta keep this politically correct, Eugene.
Yeah, I have to.
Men and women.
Men and women.
And you probably don't hear a lot of actually identify as a they in war, right? They're just like, they're just hurry up, go, right? I'm away, okay. No, but you're right. It is a bonding experience that we'll never know, because I think of the relationships that I have, like, you know, I have some comics I started with and I feel extra close to those comics because we shared so many bad nights together. But, you know, nights where a crowd didn't like you in a diner doesn't really compare to, you know, being in the Middle East with camouflage on, you know, so.
But don't you think to some degree, Sam, in our primal brain, that's what, it's almost like the love for each other that the guys that were in Vietnam have for each other when the war was over, when they had to go their separate ways. Isn't it the same with us as comics when we leave the club, you know, when you were there 2 hours before and then you get to hang out with your buddies and shoot the shit, talk about jokes?
I'm not going to say that it's the same because I know the headline's going to be comedian compares his career to that of fighting in a war.
Vietnam.
I always hate when people say to comedians, what you do is so brave. And I'm like, no, it's not. I mean, I guess it, like, you have to have, you know, you got to have nerves. You got to be like, okay, I can handle some sort of emotional rejection, but like brave shit. I mean, fighting in a war, risking your life is brave. You know, bombing for drunks, it's unpleasant. You know, I can't say it's, you know,
That
brave.
I want to know who does the auditions for those drone pilots. Do they find a Fortnite contest? Do they hire you from there? How do you upgrade?
They should do it like America's Got Talent, where they have Simon Cowell. Like, you think that's how you fly a drone? You're dreadful. Mel B is like, I thought he was good. I thought he had some talent, but. Only one of you fighter pilots can move on.
It's a no for me. Thank you. You took down 2 insurgents. He took 2.5 down. The other one was already dead. Nom, 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 nom. He killed him. I saw him. So for me, that war analogy was for, I'm feeling that withdrawal now. Because I love hearing comics. I love seeing them in real life. I feel like this pandemic has almost ripped that away from me, you know, because the jokes are ours. I think that's what we forget as comics is, and I think you're right when people say that's so brave. You're like, no,
it's
in your point of view because you're scared to say what we want to say, right? Or how we think. But the jokes are ours, but the experiences is what is unique. It's the smell, it's the anticipation. Even the lineup on its own, it's exciting. I take that for granted. Yeah, but the first time you see the lineup,
yeah,
then your brain starts going, where do I go here? And how is this guy? And how would I fit in this situation, you know?
I miss looking at the Cellar lineup and just like that lineup of killers and just being like, oh man, I love, like, especially the new joke night, the amount of comics that would drop in. You'd be like, oh my God, Jim Gaffigan, Dave Attell, like all these amazing comics just popping in to work out some new stuff. And I miss that for sure. It's tough because stage time, I think we all know, is already valuable. People think we're crazy for doing free shows sometimes, but we need to work on our stuff. We need to stay in shape. It's even more valuable in a pandemic. So that's why I started performing on roofs. That's why I started doing like weird venues. I mean, I did a show in a backyard where a woman, like, I offended her. It was her home. She was pissed drunk. And she just grabbed the mic for me, like, get out of here. And I was like, I guess that was comedy tonight. I guess that can happen. You know, so it's a strange time.
You know what I find funny is all the things that as comics we used to be against, like, I don't want to perform when the sun is out.
I know.
I hate it when it's outside. I need one
nutritional option on the menu. I need a bouncer. I need low ceilings to pocket the laughs. And now
I don't want
to
be eye level. I need eye to scrotum level with my audience. That's how I relate. I need a cordless mic with a stand that's the right height and so I can pull it off. It must be well lubricated for me to jostle it a little bit even if I don't need it. All those things fell on the wayside when we were in people's backyards.
Yeah, now it's like I'll do a park. Tomorrow I got a backyard. I got a parking lot Thursday. It's just like the saddest. Look, the one thing I won't do, at least yet, is the drive-ins. I just am like, I don't need to hear honking. I don't need to feel like worse about my life.
I saw a clip that Josh sent me of a comic at a parking, and I was like, no, man, this is terrible. It's traumatic. It was traumatic just watching it.
Yeah, it's not. It's funny, the gigs I used to get mad at. Because we all do hell gigs coming up. We all would do. I remember the ambush gigs where you're you go in the restaurant and there's like a couple eating dinner. They don't know a comedy show is about to start. And some guy goes, "You guys ready for some comedy?" And they all look at you like, "No." And you're like, "All right, well, let's get this show started." I remember I did a show with this. At this dive bar called Manchester Pub in Midtown.
Yeah.
There's four people in the crowd. The four people are Tulane University students, which is the school I left to pursue comedy. And I met them all because I told them, I remember going to some frat parties and I said, oh, I'm not going to join any frats because I'm leaving. I'm going to be a comic. Yes. And those were the four audience members. And they see me perform. They're like, this guy left school to perform for four people, all of which don't believe in him. I mean, it was like humiliating. That's what it is sometimes. I mean, you just, I told him, I was like, it's not going great, but it's going better than this. You know, it's just, this is particularly embarrassing.
Did you do your whole set? Or at some point you were like, fuck this.
No, I did it. I went down in flames. I was so obsessed with stage time. Like, I was like, look, I can get them to laugh. But they just felt bad for me. It was humiliating. I mean, looking back, I should have not done the whole set. I should have let them. I mean, it's a lot of pressure to put on four people. I always hate when there's a show and it's like, if one of these four people sets out a joke, I'm going to be like, fuck. So that's an unfair pressure to put on an audience, I think.
Small crowds are particularly weird. So tell me about the backyard. When you're at someone's backyard,
yeah,
who booked the gig? Who are the audience members and how many people were there?
It was a real hell gig. So I'm with my friend Rachel Feinstein, who's one of my best friends, and we're hanging out by the Comedy Cellar because the guy said, oh, the gig is on Bleecker. And I said, all right, perfect. That's the West Village of Manhattan. So we're just having a couple drinks at the Comedy Cellar. Then we walk over, and then I said, hey, man, I can't find the address. We're at Bleecker. And he goes, oh, it's bleaker in Brooklyn. I was like, well, you can't just give an iconic Manhattan address and then say, no, it's in another place. So we're like, fuck, all right. I said, it'll take us like 30 minutes. Can you keep the show going? He's like, yeah, I'll stall. Heads up, we had to move it from a roof because I guess some kids were like, no, we're having a party on this roof. And they're DJing. So it's like, these shows turn into turf wars. I'm like, all right, I get it. Yeah, so they're like, we're in some woman's backyard. She's pretty drunk, but... she's heckling every comic. We'll see what we can do. So we get there. She's already like screaming about the patriarchy. She's like, fuck white men. And I'm just like, sorry, I don't know what you want me to say to that. I'd still like to tell jokes if that's okay. And she's just like, the patriarchy. I'm like, what? You're heckling every comic. It's not the patriarchy. It's you. It's your home. You're drunk. She had too many white claws. And, Rachel gets up. She wouldn't let me back to like watch my friend. So I'm like, all right. And then they were like,
wouldn't
no,
let you back inside the yacht?
No. So I had to like go pee on a roof. She wouldn't let me in to use her bathroom. I had to go find like a roof to pee on. They're like, we can get inside the other roof.
With the DJs upstairs.
No, he was gone by that point. They were gone. At that point, they had left. But I mean, I'm like the last comic at that point. I'm bombing. It's going horribly. So I'm like, oh man, this took me a long time to get here. And it's pretty deep in Brooklyn. I live pretty far from here. And, everyone's like, she's heckling every comic. So she starts heckling me, and I'm kind of burying her. Like, I'm winning the crowd over because everyone, the one thing we can agree, like, maybe they don't like my material. The one thing we agree on is that we all don't like her. So yes. She keeps heckling me, and I just keep kind of just twisting her words and blasting her, and it's killing. And it's going, and I'm so mad I didn't get it on tape. It's like the one set I didn't record.
Oh, man.
And what people did record is her going on stage and grabbing the mic from me and going, get the fuck out of here. So I said, all right. I mean, look, it's her house. What am I going to argue with her? That's an even worse look. And of course, my mom saw the clip and was like, she could have given you COVID. I'm like, look, if she did, she really sucks. If she kicked me off stage and she gave me COVID, we can all agree. I mean, she definitely wasn't being safe. I can tell you that much. Yeah, I mean, that's what some of the nights were. And that's when I realized I had to record every set because good or bad, I thought people were like, you got to see this. So in my new special, there are moments where people are just hearing it. They're in their home eating dinner and they're like lifting their window up. Like, what the hell is going on? And
no,
I'm doing
way.
A joke, and I'm doing a sex joke. And they'll like open the window and they're just like, what the hell? And then they'll close the window like, ah, screw him. So there's one point where I'm doing crowd work with a guy who opens his window. It's an insane time. It's really like guerrilla style comedy. Like I've never seen it. Like we're just trying to make stuff happen. And it's insane and it's depressing, but it's also kind of exciting.
So in case someone who's listening and hasn't seen the special yet,
it just came out. Yeah,
describe to them what the special is like. So it's not set.
It's called Up on the Roof, and it's literally compiled of different rooftops I performed on because people would say, "Hey, can we do you want to do a backyard?" And I would say, "Well, I kind of don't because I think the roof theme is kind of cool because the thing about roofs in New York is every backdrop is beautiful. You've got the skyline, you've got all these great views, and I got a guy with a drone camera, so he's getting some overhead shots. So you know, you get a beautiful view. I really love what they did. Dominic Moll had my camera guy and my director, Matthew Salicus, like they really had a vision to make it look cool. So, some of the roofs were hell gigs. I mean, I remember we got to one, it was a girl's birthday. Cause at first I was doing these shows for free and I was like, I'm bombing some of these shows. I'm not going to show up and bomb for free, even if they're special. Screw that. I'm losing money to bomb. So,
the opposite. I think you'd be like, y'all can't take money if I die.
Exactly.
I can't die for free.
Well, one of the first ones I went to, a guy was like a fan of mine, and he brought his friends, and they were like stuffy finance people. And I turned it around, but I turned it around with like every trick in the book where I'm like doing crowd work. I'm riffing on the room. It took me like 10 or 15 minutes to even get him to like me. And by then I started killing, but he felt bad, so he paid me extra. And that's when I realized I should be getting more money. So... and then everyone with me was like, you're not charging? I was like, I guess I have a low self-esteem. I don't know. So we started going to more roofs, and they got we kind of slowly started to figure them out. Like I said, we need alcohol. We need to get it like as the sun is setting. My director's like, I want the sun setting so it looks beautiful. And I said, hey, well, there's six people here. People show up late to roof gigs. I'm not going to sacrifice like a whole night of performing for six people so you get the sun setting. That's not happening. So we'd be arguing. It'd be stressful. And then, you know, we did one birthday where I showed up and she wrote in one note, it's a roof. And then I guess I didn't see her second note that said, actually, it's a courtyard now. And I said, I'm sorry, it's got to be a roof. And she said, no, we can't do a roof. We can't. Like, we already have this courtyard set up. It's my birthday. She was so mad at me. And I said, I'm really sorry. I will find a roof. I will get a roof in the area. I can, like, blast people and say who's got a roof in this neighborhood that they'll get. And it usually works out. And
really?
She was so angry. And then guess what? She found a roof a block away. Her boyfriend's. I'm like, you're fighting with me? We could have found a roof. Like, so we get to the roof. Her friends are, like, hammered the whole time. It was a total lost night anyway after that whole argument. But I was like, and then they tried to be like, we should be paying you less because you had to move the show. And I'm like, I just bombed for an hour. You're going to make me. And it wasn't, like, my fault. You were all talking. Like, it was. So I love I remember, like, years ago, the Yankees had this great manager, Joe Torre, and they signed him to a contract. And all of a sudden they said, we should pay you less now because you haven't, like, had enough. And he was great. He won, like, at that point, I think 4 World Series for them. And because of the insult, I mean, it was still a lot of money, but they tried to renegotiate the contract to pay him less. He said, you know what? I'm gonna retire. Thank you. And I thought it was, like, on his part, a really classy move. And on the Yankees part, like, despicable to
respect
someone who has just given them so much and made them so much money. And they tried to change his already written contract. It made me, I don't know. I'm comparing myself to a Yankees legend. I'm like, that rooftop I performed on was very similar to a situation. What an asshole I am. I'm truly the worst.
Oh, man, we must forward this interview to Joe Torre. He must know.
I loved him. I really loved him. He was just the best.
You know what? The experience, I think as a comic, you haven't lived until you bombed.
Oh, yeah.
If there's something about bombing that makes it makes everything in slow motion. It's almost like you're playing Red Dead Redemption and your dead eye is on. Then everything goes, everything just happens so slowly. You hear everything. You can hear a pin drop. You hear yourself swallowing spit.
It's like your first black eye if you're a fighter, probably, right? It gives you some character.
But you know the saddest thing about dying, and I don't know if it's the same over there as well, it's you always find that one audience member that almost wants to shout, you can do it. And that's the worst one. You almost want them to all suck. So you can walk away and go,
you're so right.
True. There's always that one that goes,
you know what's funny is I did a gig. I remember I was working out this bit, and it was a pretty offensive bit, and it was about a baby that got eaten at Disneyland by an alligator. And I was working the bit out, and, like, when you're working out a long offensive bit, there's going to be some holes in it. So I'm trying to perfect it. And
I would say the baby getting eaten by an alligator was a big hole. But
well, what happened was I really just the whole bit was me just saying. I told, like, a one-liner about it. And then a woman wrote this long email. And the meat of the bit, poor choice of words again, but the meat of the bit was a woman's email saying how there are things that we shouldn't be allowed to be joking about. So it was really, I thought, more about, like, a woman saying you can't joke about that. And that there's nothing that makes a comic want to tell a joke more than saying you can't do that. So that was really the bit. But I remember telling the joke, and I think it was in San Jose in California, and this woman gets up, and as she opens the door, she goes, you suck, and then slams it. And so I don't even get to respond. She says, you suck, and slams the door. And I just kind of go, okay, then. And then one woman in the crowd goes, I think you're doing great. And that hurts so much more. You know? I'll take hatred over pity any day of the week.
I'm 100% with you. I hate that. That goes, you're okay.
The worst one is, I thought you were great. I don't know what's wrong with that. Sometimes they do it after a good set, too. They're like, I don't know why they're looking for some bond with you. I thought you were great. And it's just like, it went well. I don't know why you're doing this. Like, why are you bringing me down? That one and the other one is, I remember one time at the comic strip, a woman came up to me and goes, "You were our second favorite." I'm like, just say you liked me. Why are you ranking us? It's wild.
There's nothing worse than someone after complimenting you for 5 minutes with a drink in their hand, then they call you by the wrong name. That sucks. Yeah,
the worst.
You're like, no, that's not me. That was the other guy. They go, oh, you are also fine. I can't trust you for anything anymore. I sometimes think those people are sent by the comedy union if it exists. They get dispatched
to bring you back down.
Yes, you feel they have to go give good feedback.
Like, let me bring it back down.
Keep the industry going. Maybe those people have saved so many careers. But then now, I had this bit about when I was first working it out. It was about hunting in the Serengeti. So in my bit, the gist of it is the women. There's different types of women, and you compare them to the animals. So you go antelope, the impala, and then those are the ones that you want to catch. And then there's the buffalo. And there's the wildebeest. That's that hard, tough meat that you don't want, right?
Yes.
So I go, and then the men, you find different categories. You find the lion with a mane. It's the guy that doesn't want to settle down.
Right.
And you find like the cheetahs, you know, those are self-explanatory. And then you find like the hyenas that are always just scavenging what the cheetah has eaten. What the lion has eaten. So I made this bit and I was like, so... As men, we go to the watering hole, you know, just like the lions do. And then we scout out for the fittest gazelle out there. And then, you know, we jump, but the gazelle knows we're there, but they just pretend they don't know we're there. And then we just jump out and we catch the gazelle, grab it by the throat. Nah, we take it back to our den.
Yeah.
So this whole bit goes on, right? Everyone's having a good time. This is the first time I ever do this bit. Everyone is laughing and I'm thinking, oh, this bit is going very well. I'm working out the kinks, obviously. Jesus. Did I not go home on my Twitter, a long ass tweet about like, you know, in a thread is about how dare you speak about women being devoured by lions. And I was like, first of all, it was an impala being devoured.
At least get it right if you're going to be.
And I was like, and I was like, I've also devoured some women and they never complained. But anyway, let's get the point. And she was like, in this culture of violence against women. Oh, my God. And I was like, it was just a joke. And I was like, how do you take that one person's comment and compare it to what the audience was reacting like, right? Because that's what people take for granted. We hear what the audience is saying. The audience is laughing and they clearly find, and they're helping us find the joke. But then one person sends that long ass tweet or email. So that always makes me wonder, have we progressed to a point where criticizing a comic has become so easy and the cancel culture has become so prevalent that we can basically end someone's career?
Well, you can't end their career over that. I think what happens is some people have this problem where they make jokes about them.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, if you heard all the other jokes and you laughed at all the other jokes, then like, don't make, like, it's either, I've heard the South Park guys say, it's either all okay or none of it's okay. And I think people need to remember, you know, try not to take a joke personally. Like sometimes I always want like someone on Twitter before they attack you to go take a deep breath and go, am I making this about me? Because if the answer is yes, then fucking don't hit send. You know, it's really hilarious how much people do that. And but then it's also strange to me when I don't know, like people get very like we're too accessible. That is also the problem. Like they can reach us. Like we will see the message. And I think artists throughout history, and I hesitate to call comics artists, but I think like Carlin said, we're like the lowest of the artists, which I think is actually kind of fun that we're like the bottom of the barrel.
Us and mimes.
Hey, miming's hard, man. I mean, to do the whole thing without words, I think that's tough. I think we're too accessible. I think for people to be able to just reach us, I mean, some people, like, their whole day is just, like, trolling, you know, me, then trolling one of my friends, and trolling, like, that's their form of entertainment, is to, like, try to get under our skin. And some people will be like, well, you got to roast them back. And I'm like, no. I don't know you, dude. I don't give a shit. You're nothing to me. Like, I'll roast. They think roasting is something that, like, is like a duel. It's like, I challenge you to a duel. It's like, no, I Roasting is like between two friends who like each other. It's not between me and some dude with one follower on Twitter and like a, you know, who's like, hey, fuck you. And I'm just like, I guess I have to duel now. I guess accept. We must. I accept. But yeah, I just think that the whole cancel culture thing is tough too, because it's all looped into one word now where they're like, I don't want to be, I don't, because I told a joke you didn't like. I don't want to be like, the worst thing I ever saw was, or one of them was, it was like a list of comedians who got canceled this year. And it was like, or entertainers, it was like people who got canceled this year. And it was like Bill Cosby, Harvey Weinstein, and then the comedian Shane Gillis. And I was like, this is like an SAT question, which one doesn't belong? I'm like, do you see what the other ones did? Like, I think of saying the wrong thing, maybe we could be more forgiving as a society. You know, I know Shane. I think he's a good guy. So I think I'm sure he regrets what he said. And
what did he say?
He got booted from SNL. He got cast in SNL and he said a racist thing about Asian people on his show. And he just, and guess what? He regrets it. So let's move on. And yes. You can't progress as a society with if you hold on to things, I think.
Yeah.
So, but to list him with two serial rapists, I was like, I don't like this one size fits all condemnation system that we have. And I think it's pretty damaging. And I will say this, though. When people really critique comics, it does kind of cement stand-up as an art form, because, you know, if you're getting this pissed off, then you're taking us seriously.
Well, Sam, that's deep. that is hectic. Yes.
I'll take things my girlfriend has never said to me. Now,
because if you're right, if you take the time to think about what we said and critique it and take it that far, it means at some point, at some level, you do take what we do seriously. And I think deep down, we want to be taken seriously, right? We say things.
We do, yeah.
And we're like, but I mean this. And then they go, oh, you funny guys. You're like, no, I mean it. And the only time that you don't mean it is when someone comes for you and goes, you meant it.
Isn't that great? That's a great point. Yeah, when they really, and then they say it like we don't do all this kind of like self-evaluation. Like we all kind of live in our heads, right? So, you know, when we're writing jokes, we are thinking, like I didn't used to, but now I'm like, well, what am I saying with that joke? Yeah. You know, I'm like, is it funny enough for how mean it is? Is it funny enough for how dark it is? Like I'm just trying to weigh, does this all fit? Does this work? Yeah. Funny is still number one for me, but like I want it to feel like me now. I think when you're brand new, you're like, this hit, that's all that matters. But as you get older, you're like, this has got to sound like me.
Yeah. I compare it to when you're starting out in comedy, you're an employee. And then in the middle of your career, when you're starting to realize your worth, you become an entrepreneur. You take more risks.
Yes.
You're asking yourself, is the product that I'm putting out worth my name on it? You know, you want to see the impact of your product out there in the streets. Whereas before, when you're just an employee, you're just like, I'm trying to secure the next gig. And that, I think that's where, if you stay employee for long, you lose your voice or you never find your voice. You become so comfortable with the slot that the people that are booking you are putting you in. And I always used to have arguments and conversations, I think, backstage with comics in South Africa when I was saying, the minute the person that's hosting the gig feels like you're too safe, then you don't belong there anymore. Yeah. The minute they go, no, you are beef stew. Everyone loves beef stew. Then you go, no, but I want
to. Not in America. A lot of vegans here. But I know what you're saying. Like a safe dish. I know what you mean. Like it's almost like you don't want to be the comic that kills 100% of the time. Because that means you're not doing new shit. That means you're not taking risks, right?
Yes. Yes. And I find that as I got older, I became more confident in the fact that what I have to say is what I have to say. And the weirdest thing that started happening is I started worrying about what I'm going to wear on the night rather than what I'm going to say on the night, which used to be the opposite problem for me when I was starting out. I used to really, really worry about what I was going to say. And it would preoccupy my mind because I would think, how do I please the person that's booked me? How do I please the audience? How do I please myself in the process as well, which is very hard to do. But right now, when I just worry about, what shirt am I going to wear this time? I worry less about the jokes. And when you get there and you just make the connection, right? And then you just go, we're going this way. I don't know about you, but I think we're going this way.
Yeah, I think not caring, like a hint of not caring is pretty important. And I don't mean like you should care about the work you're putting in. You should care about the product. But like when you don't really care about the response, you'll go to more interesting places and you'll say things that are a little more provocative. And I think a lot of the comics I really like watching are ones that I think, man, that premise must have not hit at some point. Like that must have taken some. I mean, think about every Chris Rock bit that you're like, man, that must have taken a minute because that one sounds like it must have pissed some people off at first. Yeah. And then I love a premise that pushes some people away and a punchline that brings them back in.
Yeah. Yeah. I always say I love a sucker punch. I love a sucker punch punchline. I love not seeing where the person is coming from, you know? I love not understanding. But I when we as comics get, but I think you are at that point now where a lot of great comics say great things about you. Everyone that is great goes, that guy is the one to look out for.
Yeah, it means a lot, man. I think a lot of great comics are very generous with young comics, and if they can feel that they're putting in the work and stuff, they're like, oh, that guy's, he's working hard, he's trying hard. And I think a lot of those comics feel that I respect them very much. And, you know, comics like Colin Quinn and Gaffigan and Attell and all these New York comics that are, you know, just incredible. As a young comic, you're like, I can't believe I'm on a show with these guys. And then they start being friendly to you and they start being nice and they'll make a comment about a joke. And, you know, and within Attell's case, take you on the road. And it really was, I felt like I was at the best school for comedy, just being at the Comedy Cellar. And like, man, you can't get a better education on comedy than being around the funniest human beings who are doing it in such a pure way. Yeah. And giving so much respect to comedy as an art form. I mean, like, I think I watch Colin Quinn, I'm like, this guy is doing these heady one-man shows. And I watch, you know, and then you see you're on shows with all these comics you admire. You really gotta pinch yourself. I mean, not to sound cheesy, but you're like, holy shit, I just left a diner with Dave Attell at 5 a.m. and I just feel like I haven't laughed that hard in my life just being around. So yeah, you got to be grateful that they're that generous.
No, they definitely loving you, man. We love hearing stories from our guests about the craziest thing that has ever happened to them, whether in real life or, you know, a story that they can make up in their heads, but real life is preferably better.
Well, okay, this was pretty crazy. Last year, I have a bit about this, but last year I was in Vermont and there doing the club, the Vermont Comedy Club. And after the show, I'm at the bar with my friend Carmen Lagala, who was featuring for me, and we're just hanging out, having a beer. She's from Vermont, so she said, let's go to this bar, it's cool. Some guy just walks up to me and he goes, he's hammered, it was University of Vermont? And I said, no, and he goes, master's degree? And I said, you're getting colder. And then he goes, I want to beat the shit out of all of you. But he's only looking at me. It's like me, Carmen, and two of her friends. He's only looking at me, and I'm like, ah, this guy's like drunk and bluffing, fuck him. You know, I just turn around, start sipping my beer. And then he takes a pint glass and smashes it over my head. And I was like, god damn it. I'm just in the moment, I was like, fucking asshole. I'm like in shock.
I'm going to have to kill you.
So I get up. Well, my first thought was I had a metal tripod for my camera, and I'm like, do I just swing this at this dude right now? But the other part of me is like, does he have a gun? I'm in Vermont, like this is like a carry state. So I'm just like,
I like how you never thought of prison. And
well, I don't think. Well, I mean, like, yeah, you're right. Maybe that's it's the funniest of, Your Honor. It was a tripod. This is not a weapon. But anyway, I get up slowly, like just staring at him. He's just staring at me. And the two of the guys I'm with stood up with me And I'm like, all right, they're pretty big. One of them's big. He was ready to go. And the guy just stares at me, and then he walks out, and he stares at me through the glass like he's like hammered and starting shit. So true story, I yell out, you all heard him call me Jew boy before he did it. You know, I'm trying to up this to a hate crime, you know? And everyone's like, he didn't do that. I'm like, I know he didn't, but I'm, you know. So then they call the cops, and he's not getting far. He's hammered. He's like walking. The cops get him. Apparently he went for the cop's gun, all right? He wanted, I think what happened was, I found out later in the report, he was trying to commit suicide by cop. He had just been going through a divorce. He was blackout drunk. And they arrested him. And I hear from the victim's advocate of Vermont, they call me. And she said, he's a therapist. And I was like, wow, well, not a great one probably. And what he did was a felony. So, I mean, she said, do you want to come and testify? I was like, well, I don't think he should be a therapist. You know, like maybe he should do another job. And I think he can't practice therapy for 5 years is the punishment or something like, I don't know. I don't know how he's going to get back. Where have you been the last 5 years? Ah, I had a thing. Anyway, it was a whole thing. I mean, pretty wild to me that he, that was in the last year. I thought it was pretty wild.
That was wild. Imagine when they asked him what he would like to say before he got sentenced, and he said, Your Honor, I don't like the victim's cranky face. Oh, man, that was so much fun. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you, Eugene. I really appreciate it, and it was nice to meet you guys.